Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have bad, worse, and crazy martinis for conservatives to wrap up the week. The first two dealing with the healthcare chaos that's unfolding on the Republican side of Capitol Hill. Jim, we start with the bad. As most folks know by now, there was supposed to be a vote on Thursday on the American Health Care Act. That got postponed, obviously, because the votes were not there. All these different media organizations have their whip counts of how many Republicans still are not on board. They can afford to lose 21, assuming all the Democrats vote no. And right now, every single whip count has more than 21. So we'll get into the logistics here in a little bit. But first of all, the fact that this vote was scheduled and very publicly without knowing whether you had the votes is an odd tactic by Republican leadership. And then the administration, of course, has been very actively lobbying for this. The president has had a number of small groups of Congress members, a lot of Freedom Caucus folks, over to the White House to try and twist their arms and even in some cases try to make a couple of concessions here and there. But then at the same time, last night, the White House sent Reince Priebus, the chief of staff, budget director Mick Mulvaney, and chief strategist Steve Bannon to Capitol Hill. This is according to the New Yorker now, to deliver an ultimatum to wavering House members, pass the bill or Trump is moving on. But when it comes to Bannon, it says publicly Bannon has been working to help the bill pass. Privately, he's talked it down in recent days. According to a source close to the White House, Bannon said that he's unhappy with the Ryan bill because it doesn't drive down costs and was written by the insurance industry. He wants to deconstruct the administrative state. And of course, Bannon's bad blood with Paul Ryan goes back quite a ways. So, Jim, chaos doesn't even begin to describe this anymore.
I come from this very old-fashioned perspective, Greg, that if you want something, fight for it. And if you don't want it, don't fight for it. And I know that sounds really, you know, really obscure, but, you know, the argument, for example, John Harwood of the Wall Street Journal, just a little bit earlier this morning, said he's quoting a senior White House aide, asked if a decisive healthcare defeat today is the best for Team Trump, 100%. Now we don't know, you know, senior White House aide could be anybody. It could be Bannon. It could be Priebus or something. You know, look, from the very beginning of this, Breitbart.com, which Bannon used to edit, insisted upon calling it Ryan Care. And what was bizarre is that no matter how much Trump insisted he was behind this bill, no matter how much Trump said he was pushing for this bill, he was cajoling, he was arm twisting. You cannot say that Trump has not been willing to put in the effort to try to pass this bill. And that's something to his credit. I think I have a piece that's, you know, sitting on the editor's desk, and depending on how things shake out today, it may see the light of day by the end of today, or it may require rewriting. But I was going to say, Trump did everything short of understanding why people didn't like it, which probably would have been more helpful, because the problem, most House Republicans, it wasn't that they liked the status quo and liked Obamacare. It wasn't that they didn't want to see Trump succeed. It wasn't that they had no fear of primary fights, and it's not that they're, you know, utterly confident that Republicans could you know, won't lose their House majority in 2018. They're aware of all of this. They just don't like what's in the bill. And we can argue about whether it's a reasonable objection or not, depending on how they got to get it through the Senate. There's been this really fascinating point made by Mike Lee a few days ago, who said that, look, he talked to the Senate parliamentarian. He said the Senate parliamentarian's definition of what can be done through reconciliation, which is basically a budget bill, could be a lot more far-reaching than we've been led to think so far. So in light of that, I would basically practically invite the Senate parliamentarian in on the drafting process.
Sure.
Basically say, can we do this? Yes. Okay, then it goes in. Can we not do this? Okay, we're taking it out. And basically put as much into this as possible, which is basically an argument to going back to the drawing board. The Trump White House, like, they always talked about principles. They always talked about broad guidelines of what they wanted in the bill. They talked about they're doing this in three phases, and anything you were disappointed with in phase one would come in phase two and three. Look, guys, if you don't like the bill, then don't push for it. If you do like the bill, then you got to push for it. You can't go back and later on and say, well, we didn't really like it, or, oh, it's Ryan's fault or something like that. Look, guys, there's nothing stopping the President of the United States from issuing his own legislation. He's got to get somebody to introduce it for him in the House of Representatives. But if Trump said, this is the Trump administration health care bill, you'd get a decent number of, my guess is you get a decent number of House Republicans going for it. Now, would it be enough to get a majority? I don't know. I think deep down there are very big contradictions amongst Republicans about what part of Obamacare they want to fix first and what is the highest priority. Is it controlling costs? Is it ensuring a smooth transition? Is it trying to avoid denying people, you know, getting people losing care who currently have it? You know, this is a big, complicated system, and I don't think there's necessarily a villain here, but there's going to, you know, because this is likely to fail, because they are unlikely to get the 217 or so votes that they need, there's going to be an enormous appetite to find a villain. And it's been very interesting to see how much they say, oh, it's Ryan's fault. We're going to call it Ryan Care, as if you can basically, as if we can all just kind of pretend Trump hasn't spent the last 2 weeks doing everything he can to get this bill passed. I am now coming around to the go back to the drawing board stage, and it'd be an enormous disappointment for the administration. It'd be an enormous disappointment for Republicans. It would be a big setback, but you could conceivably get a better bill passed some amount of months down the road. Now, if you delay it towards the end of the year, it makes it a lot harder to put it into effect for 2018. Some of the changes might not take effect till 2019, but you know what? This is the, you know, do you want to get it fast or do you want to get it right? This is the option before you now, Republicans. And I think they find themselves in a really tough situation. It's going to be very tough to avoid a serious defeat for the administration coming up later today. And that kind of leads into our worst martini, doesn't it, Greg?
It certainly does. And it's just a matter of how strong the pride is. And if it's wounded today, how wounded it will be going forward. And given the track record on that front, there is some reason for concern. This is NBC News. Office of Management and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney made clear Thursday evening that President Donald Trump is done negotiating on the hotly debated health care bill and wants a vote on Friday. And if the president doesn't get a vote to repeal and replace Obamacare, he will move on to other priorities, Mulvaney said, according to a source in the room during the tense talks with GOP members. A senior administration source confirms to NBC News the very definitive, very clarifying message from the president and the administration's intention to move on should the health care bill fail to move forward to other matters such as tax reform, trade, and border security. If the bill does not pass, the president would see it as people in Congress breaking their promises to their constituents to repeal and replace Obamacare, even with a Republican president in the White House, with the not-so-subtle message is we're basically going to keep this, and we can either blame you. Earlier he said he'd blame the Democrats if the bill didn't get through. But, Jim, the idea that he's going to fight for it for a couple of weeks here and then pretend one of his biggest campaign promises is just going to go off into the ether somewhere is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm left saying, if this is a negotiating tactic, I understand it, right? You know, look, guys, do you want a deal or not? I'm walking away if you don't say yes, right? You can understand. The problem is that basically it's a bluff, I assume, because if it's not a bluff and the House votes no today, which certainly a lot of the whip counts and a lot of the back of the envelope counts and people's measurements of the number of Republicans saying they're either no or very skeptical, certainly looks like it could go that way. Well, then basically the message of a Republican president is going to be, yeah, we tried to repeal Obamacare and we couldn't, so we're done. It's sticking around. We give up. That would be such a political suicide. That would be such an epic betrayal of every Obamacare skeptic or foe that voted for Trump. I almost can't believe he's really doing it. And deep down, I kind of think, like I said, this is just this is just rhetoric, but, you know, it's Trump, so you never 100% know. And maybe he really will feel like, oh, House Republicans betrayed him. He made a real solid effort in this, and you can genuinely make that argument. And that the House Freedom Caucus is being unreasonable. These guys are ridiculous. And by the way, here's the real danger, is that at some point, Trump says, oh, I can't get anything done with these House Republicans. They're not unified. What can I get by working with the Democrats? And all of a sudden you see a push for infrastructure spending, and all of a sudden you see a push for mandatory maternity leave, and all these things that come from the Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, all of the New York crowd, all of the folks who really aren't conservatives could end up having Trump's ear and pushing him in a much less conservative direction. And this grand opportunity for Republicans of Republican control of the House, Republican control of the Senate, and a Republican presidency could slip through our fingers. as Trump's non-conservative instincts kick in. Now, again, I'm not sure Trump really means this, but you know, Jonathan Swan of Axios is you know, this morning said, look, the Freedom Caucus source has said to me right now, they think they want it to fail on the floor to make a point. Well, you might get that point, guys. The problem is what comes after you've made that point, because if they don't go back to the drawing board, I you know, it would be one of the most bitter ironies of the modern politics if Obamacare was largely kept in place because of the frustration of Republican President Trump, who did nothing but endlessly pledge on the campaign trail that he was going to repeal and replace Obamacare.
This could have been done better in so many different ways. Just to give you an idea of where we are in this debate, of course, back in 2010, the very famous Nancy Pelosi quote was, "We have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it." Last night on MSNBC, New York Republican Congressman Chris Collins talking with Brian Williams says, "In my district right now, there's a lot of misunderstanding as to what it is we're doing. And once we get it done, and then we can have the chance to really explain it."
No! Oh, man. What's that saying, Greg? History repeats itself first as tragedy, then as farce. That's that seems like that's where we are. Guys, you can't even watch the phrasing like that, can you? That's really bad.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, let's move on to...
this is the first hemlock martini. Martini lunch.
Let's move on to the crazy martini, and let's talk a little bit about our least favorite person in the history of the three martini lunch, Harry Reid. This is courtesy of the Las Vegas Sun. The Las Vegas airport should be renamed after the recently retired U.S. senator who many in Nevada call the most politically powerful man in state history, some legislators argued at a Senate hearing on Friday. Quote, "There's no one in the history of Nevada that has done more for Nevada than Harry Reid," Senate Bill 174 sponsored Tick Siegerbloom, D. Las Vegas, said in front of the Senate Committee on Government Affairs. "There's not a part of the state he hasn't touched." Well, that's probably true. In addition to renaming Las Vegas International Airport after Reid, Siegerblum proposed doing away with all traces of current airport namesake and former U.S. Senator Pat McCarran, who he and other presenting advocates of the bill labeled as anti-Semitic and a racist. Jim, so we'll see if this goes through. We, of course, have to be fundamentally opposed to this. There's a couple of different fascinating things to think about here. First of all, the different exhibits you could have maybe at the Harry Reid International Airport. Maybe there could be a little store where you could go in and just an animated Harry Reid just totally makes up things and lies about you.
I was just thinking about, I'm trying to picture what life is like at the Harry Reid International Airport. I imagine the overhead announcer would have that raspy whisper that Harry Reid always would say. Among them, all tourists, please stand to the left in the hallways because you smell. And in the summer, you sweat. And we, the rest of us, just can't stand being around you. Just like Senator Reid said about tourists. I'm not making this up. This is actual comments that he made about how much he hated tourists in the summer coming through Capitol Hill. Or the other one, I imagine the TSA would be really tough at Harry Reid International Airport because at any given moment, the overhead announcer would say, that passenger right over there, he is a criminal. He did not pay his taxes. Don't ask me how I know. I have a very reliable source. Pull them out. Give them the full frisking, and including put on the rubber gloves, do the full probing and everything. I just heard. Trust me. And you can't sue me because I'm saying this on the floor of the Senate.
Oh,
anyway, if they do that, you think the Koch brothers are ever taking a connecting flight through Vegas? Only Pepsi in this airport.
Well, a lot of people don't know who McCarran is. I certainly don't know a lot about him. So, Jim, I mean, if you were going to name an airport after somebody in Las Vegas, Bugsy Siegel International, he kind of built up the joint. Frank
Evil
Sinatra.
Evil
Knievel.
The association with horrible crashes might not be that. Does Elvis have an airport named after him?
You know. Good question. Anybody from the Rat Pack, really. Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, you know, got a lot of people there. When I think of glitz, glamour, and flash, Harry Reid's not exactly who I think of there.
You know who it really should be? Oh, my goodness. This is what a way to honor both a great American, someone who's invariably associated with Las Vegas, and kind of honoring the spirit of flight that drives the entire aerospace industry and airlines. Greg, it should be the Flying Elvises International Airport. The parachuting guys who are honeymoon in Vegas, right? You know, what represents Vegas better than the Flying Elvises? So, there you go.
If it does get changed to Harry Reid and you want to go to Vegas, you're just going to have to fly somewhere else and drive, I guess.
I was going to say, yeah, I'm not flying into Harry Reid. Also, you know, how you doing? Well, I mean, ordinarily, so what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm going from D.C. to Vegas. It's going to be awesome. How you doing? Oh, God, I'm flying from Reagan to Harry Reid. Well, maybe you'd be happy to come back to D.C. So.
That's true. Jim, an insane week in Washington, to be sure. Hopefully next week will be a little more tame. I will be out Monday and Tuesday, but there will be podcasts those days. So talk to you soon.
See you next week, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And tune in again Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.